Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Time to get back to work. I almost stumbled on good morning. That's how lethargic I am after a three-day weekend.
Did you golf?
No.
Oh.
I needed a mental health break from golf.
I was
going to
say, did you golf well? But no.
Needed a mental health break from golf. Didn't golf. Did a little shooting.
Okay.
Thankfully, I didn't have to take the Kennedy on the way to my sportsman's club.
Oh, you're lucky.
Because a little bit of, although I go early. I'm not, you know, start my day at noon. So
well, I drove right by there.
I saw your tweet about it. So you drove right by there to see all of the state police and Chicago police cars on the side of the road. Must have been very exciting.
Well, it was very exciting. My son was like, ooh, I've never seen so many police officers in my life. There's about 240 Illinois State Police. Rosemont Police had a contingency a little bit further down the road at the CTA stop. Park Ridge Police were out there, Chicago Police. I was ready to run somebody over. Because I had to get to the Oak Park River Forest Boat Regatta competition.
No,
I mean, how could I be inconvenienced for that?
The boat regatta in Oak Park River Forest.
Which we're the reigning champs from last year, so, you know. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to let them bully me out of driving down a highway.
Where does that boat regatta, where does that take place?
At Oak Park River Forest Country Club in the swimming pool. Well, what? Next to the golf course, next to the club.
I don't want to hear about the hoity-toity life I lead.
Hey, I'm just a
boat
guest.
Boat regatta at Oak Park Country Club.
We have the ghetto boat.
It's Oak Park Country Club, by the way. It's not Oak Park River Forest Country Club.
Oh, whatever.
It's not a high school, for goodness sakes. Okay.
All right, anyway, so delayed about 12 minutes with traffic. That's all right. I could handle that. But I saw there was a free Blago sign. There were
free Blago.
Aldermatic campaign signs for different wards. There was convict Jason Van Dyke. There was peace on the streets. It just seemed, again, like the land of misfit toys. And honestly, more reporters than police officers.
Well, you did.
Than protesters.
Well, you had sort of protesters from both perspectives, though, both the shutdown protesters and then those protesting the shutdown protesters. Here's a sampling of two protesters representing both of those, each of those sides.
Absolutely. Well, part of the reason for the gun violence is that there is a lack of jobs, a lack of opportunity. I'm aware of all of these things.
I'm just here to support CPD. You know, I think they get a very bad rap in what they do. I respect her. I respect her views as well. There is a problem over there. There is a problem. But to blame it all on guns is unfair. It's a drug war. It's a gang war. It's not all guns.
And to blame it on lack of economic opportunity is also unfair because it presumes a causal link. And we know there's no causal link because to suggest a causal link would to say everyone without economic opportunity is a criminal or is a criminal in waiting. And we know in those four police districts where it's contained.
Right.
So says Tiny Dancer and Superintendent Johnson. In those four police districts, the overwhelming majority of the residents are law-abiding, which is why, in part, we talk about this, because you have law-abiding people being held hostage and victimized by a small group of predators, and the Tiny Dancer approach to this is to contain them rather than to intercede on behalf of the law-abiding and make those neighborhoods safe places.
Well, we had to go into one of those contained districts on Friday when our high school team took on Orr.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Oh, my gosh.
How'd Orr?
I was driving down Chicago Avenue near Pulaski.
No, I mean,
and 100 kids, I'm not kidding you, I didn't even have time to get my phone, ran across Chicago Avenue, then these two guys got in a huge fist fight. But it was mobs.
Why didn't you break it up?
Of kids. Well, I was just glad. This sounds awful. I was just glad they didn't have guns or knives. They did the old-fashioned way. They were fist fighting. Well, we used to have fist fights at our school, so I didn't.
The girls?
Yeah, I was in a fist fight.
Sure.
But anyway, other people would have fist fights. Eighth graders, freshmen, we would get in fist fights. So it was old fashioned, but it just scared me.
That was like Mom Prospect or Hersey Fight Club.
Yeah, yeah. But we don't talk about Fight Club. Number one rule about Fight Club, don't talk about Fight Club.
Okay, Tyler.
But anyway, so, but just even being there that whole time, people felt unsafe.
What was the score?
Oh, we got trounced.
Really?
Yeah. Orr is good. Orr High School is good. 52-21.
Well, maybe Amundsen or what?
It's Amundsen.
What? Maybe they just aren't very good.
No,
maybe
they're,
you just found out they're not good.
It was a non-conference game, so it doesn't count on the records. But
well, it counts on your total record. Does it count on your conference
well,
record?
Anyway, but yeah,
how did Peyton play?
He played well.
Meal ticket.
He's played well. I'm trying to still learn the position and what good is, but he held his own and stayed in the game.
Well, send me the tape of the
game. But back to the protest.
Yeah,
so they, you know, 12 of them decided, you know what, taking one for the team. I'm going to get arrested. Reverend Gregory Livingston, who's going to join us at 6:36, Livingston, excuse me. He was one of the 12 arrested. They each got a $120 fine, and that was that.
Yeah, there were two distinct approaches. The state police had in order to arrest. Chicago police did not, unsurprisingly. Because with respect to Chicago, so you've already set the precedent that it's okay, the Dan Ryan Lakeshore Drive. So why now the Kennedy? That's what Greg Livingston is going to say, and he's got a point.
Well, that's a good question, and Deputy Superintendent Riccio responded to that.
We can never allow an airport to be shut down. There's federal implications. There's federal charges involved for anybody that would try to obstruct commerce at an airport or people coming and going. We have a holiday weekend in place. We're not going to let the airport get shut down.
Yeah, they may say shut down the airport, but you weren't federal property.
Well, you know who shut down the airport? A thunderstorm that came 2 hours later because I-90 was underwater
down.
And people were walking to Terminal 5 and to different terminals.
That it's a nice cover story, but it doesn't hold water.
Really? That's federal? Because
Well, where were they?
They're trying to go on the Cumberland exit northbound to get
Cumberland
to
exit.
Right. But as soon as they stepped on the exit, that was Illinois State Police jurisdiction.
I know, but it's no different than the Dan Ryan. So there's no like, oh, we shut down the airport. They didn't come close to shutting down the airport. They weren't on federal ground. They weren't on airport ground. It's just a cover story. I mean, because they have to come up with one because they've already ceded the precedent. Robert in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. How are you?
Good.
When you talk to the Reverend, maybe it's possible that so far the taxpayers of Illinois, now, not just Chicago, but they have spent over $1 million on these protests. Maybe the Reverend can somehow talk to the state of Illinois and say, we're going to do this again. He said it on the news. They're going to get bigger and better the next time. Why don't they spend that money on actually fixing the problem instead
of
putting the burden on the taxpayers of all of Illinois? Isn't there some type of solution? I'm just curious as your response.
Thanks for the call, Robert. I would say, that money is obviously better spent all sorts of places, including hiring more police. But, I mean, this is Illinois. We love to see politicians waste our money. So what's $1 million? This is a state with $250 billion in debt, and all of a sudden people are concerned about $1 million? I mean, come on, let's be honest with ourselves. Don't go fiscal conservative on me now, Illinois, Chicago. Fiscal conservatives, $1 million? Come on. The state's, I should say the city's police and fire pension fund, $30 billion unfunded. I mean, I could go on. $1 million? What are you talking about? What are you talking about,
Willis? I just
feel
bad for all the police officers from Rosemont, Park Ridge, Chicago.
Feel bad, why?
Because they had their day off canceled and had to sit there and babysit 20 protesters with free blogos.
Free blogos. You got a civilian political authority problem. So don't talk to me about police. Police have nothing to do with this, really. It's the civilian political authorities. So unless you want to talk about changing that, then you're not going to change anything on the ground for the police or for anybody else, including taxpayers. By the way, speaking of contain, here's the other part of, and we'll talk about this with Greg Livingston, the the other part of the criminal justice system, you know, the prosecutors, this story, I mean, just to put a face on this, because it's not just statistics, a woman raped in Westtown. That's not one of the four districts to which the crime is contained.
No.
The woman had been walking from the CTA Chicago Blue Line to a Westtown business at the time of the attack around 7 a.m. This is a week ago Sunday. Suffered traumatic brain injuries. Her facial bones were shattered. She's in a concussed state, unable to speak or see. Rufus Carson, 37, charged with attempted murder, aggravated kidnapping, and aggravated criminal sexual assault. He is being held without bond now. He was released. He was out on bond when he committed this rape and nearly murdered this woman. He was released from jail in McHenry County, where he had five prior felonies and seven failures to appear in court. In the latest incident, for which he was released from McHenry County Jail, he allegedly masturbated in front of his girlfriend's child. So he was being prosecuted for a case of sexual exploitation of a child, in addition to the five felonies, in addition to the seven failures to appear. And a McHenry County judge allowed him out on bail anyway. It's not just Cook County. All over this place. And we talk about Kim Fox a lot, and we should, because that's where most of the problem is, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. But you want to get a handle on this entire problem of violent crime in the region, then you got to address the prosecutors and judges. Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Thanks for having me on the Dan for taking my call. You didn't mention how much the protesters affected O'Hare, but I came in to O'Hare last night at 9 o'clock. I had a weekend vacation in San Francisco, and it was a real nightmare.
It was because of the weather, Bob. It had nothing to do with the protesters. But, yeah, it was a nightmare. Hundreds of flights were canceled, and people literally, their cars were stuck on I-90 underwater.
Well, we were in the plane for over an hour waiting for a gate, and people were losing their flights.
Bob.
I got to find out what happened and read the newspapers with regards to the
listen to the show.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Next time, obviously, the recommendation I always provide with this, fly private.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We like to stay abreast of innovations in medicine.
Yes.
And we've got another modern medical marvel.
What happened? Oh, no. Is
nice
this another
alliteration on my part?
Implant of some sort or bionic arm or something? Or a bionic leg?
Doctors were forced to improvise when it came to removing a sex toy from one lucky patient. The smoothness and the size of the 23-inch dildo was the problem for the doctors. That's what they had to figure out.
24 inches?
So they... 23. So they got to work.
Ouch.
The 31-year-old who went to the hospital.
Woman, I hope.
You can hope. 24 hours after the item became stuck, he went to the hospital. He figured, this is too big a job for me. And
this isn't going to end well. I might need some help here. We got a stage 5 clinger.
He was suffering from mild abdominal pain. I'm sure he was.
What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where did this take place? What town? Please don't say Chicago.
Are you looking to visit? Do you think they're going to put this in the museum?
I want to send flowers.
Of course.
Maybe a fruit basket.
Yeah, I'll find that. This is in Naguardo, Italy.
Okay.
So they
hey.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you say Italy?
Yeah. Mamma mia! The size of this. They tried using the standard techniques that we're all familiar with.
Right.
Where a tube and a grabbing device inserted. It wasn't cutting it.
So did they have to perform surgery?
They created a new tool with a noose of wire at the end. It's like trying to get your car, when you lock your car keys in.
I'm going to throw up. Kind of
like that.
Don't.
Doctors created a new tool with a noose of wire at the end to hook onto the dildo.
Honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Is this guy single?
I'll see if I can get his number for you.
Yeah. Put it in the get well card.
Mm-hmm. They confirmed what they were dealing with because they did an X-ray that showed a long and large-sized foreign body in his colon.
Okay. Just tell me how it ended.
Threading the wire through a catheter tube to create a noose at the end, they were able to insert the tube into the man's colon and reach the sex toy. The noose of wire was then looped around the dildo like a lasso. This is going to be make a great Western.
Yeah,
if only Sam Peckinpah were still alive.
Yeah.
And tightened until doctors had enough grip to pull it out.
Okay. All right.
And this patient continues to stalk the doctors. When can I see you again?
Yeah.
He was also given the improvised lasso as a parting gift. For the next time.
Okay.
All right. So, I mean, just to know that there's innovations in this space for just for your edification.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I know everybody wants to talk about McCain's funeral, or maybe not. But I want to talk about Aretha first, because I think this Bishop Charles Ellis guy is getting a bad rap. I really do.
Really?
I think this controversy is manufactured. Now, Bill Clinton leering at Ariana Grande, not a bad rap.
That guy's a creep. That was making the round. I mean, they had some semi-perverted men, Aretha Franklin decided, because she planned her funeral, too, just as if John McCain did, sitting behind... You know, up there behind the lectern, you had Reverend Jesse Jackson, you had this Bishop Ellis from Atlanta, and you had Bill Clinton, and who else? But they were eyeballing these, went one-on-one. When people got up and performed, they were like, yeah, like, oh, yeah.
Wow.
Checking them out with their eyes.
Yeah, okay. Bill Clinton leering is something substantively different than what you're talking about. And I like the opening line of the Washington Examiner's editorial. Why is Bill Clinton still allowed in public? That's an excellent question. Nobody really knows. Both of them, for that matter, the Clintons.
Aretha Franklin's family wants Bishop Ellis to apologize this morning for
his
eulogy.
He did apologize.
Well, they want another apology. I don't think it's enough. He spoke for 52 minutes, and they said he'd never discussed her. He discussed his political agenda.
Well, okay. Well, that's a separate thing. But he was getting raked over the coals for his whole interaction with Ariana Grande,
when he grabbed her boob,
she's a tiny little thing, and she comes up, and he just like puts his arm around her, and he put his arm around her too high.
She's 4'9".
That's what I'm saying. And so I don't think it was intentional. So first he apologizes for the grab, and then for the joke. Here's the apology for the grab.
It would never be my intention to touch any woman's breast. I don't know. I guess I put my arm around her. I hugged all the female artists and the male artists, everybody that was up. I shook their hands and hugged them. And that's what we're all about in the church, about love. And again, maybe I crossed the border, or maybe I was too friendly or familiar. But again, I apologize.
I think it's pretty innocent.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I really do. It's not my intention to ever grab a woman's breast. Something you've never heard Bill Clinton say, by the way. That distinguishes him from Bishop Ellis. So then he made this joke when she came up on stage, right, about her name.
Right.
And so he apologized for that.
When I saw Ariana Grande on the program, I thought that was a new something at Taco Bell.
I certainly want to apologize to Ariana and to her fans and to her family and to her entire community if what I said was taken the wrong way. And maybe it's just a joke that went bad. But when you're doing the program for 9 hours, you know, you try to keep it lively. You try to make some funny references and what have you. I love everybody. And I certainly hope that she will forgive me. And the last thing I want to do is to be a distraction for Miss Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. This is all about her. It's not about me. And I'm so sorry.
I thought, hey, look, you know, you're the MC of the ceremony. You're trying to keep it lively, as he said. He makes a little joke about her name. She's like, oh, my God, and she giggles. And what's the big deal?
Not a big deal.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
The problem was during his eulogy of her, he talked about black crime and how blacks have to stop killing other blacks. And he talked about how children who are left to be raised without their fathers are post-abortion babies. I mean, he was political. He had a message to send to the African-American community. I don't fault him for that at all. I applaud him for that. But the problem is, in the 52 minutes when he spoke, Dan, he didn't mention her once. It was as if he was separated. It kind of reminded me of the royal wedding when they had that African-American Episcopal priest who, he for a little bit, talked about, you know, political issues rather than talking about the couple. But he came back to the couple. But this guy never came back to Aretha Franklin. It was just a message he was sending.
All right. That's fair.
What do you say? It was poignant and it was effective, because I was watching it at home and I thought, oh my gosh, this is getting real.
Well, I mean, he's got an international stage, and he's got all the assembled luminaries that he's addressing. And maybe he did go, I don't know, maybe he did go off script and with respect to his discussion about some of those societal ills and specifically the black community. I don't know. But if the Aretha Franklin's family is upset, then perhaps...
So they want another apology for this.
Okay,
guy.
This guy,
he's got to be exhausted apologizing.
All these apologies.
And if he's apologizing, why isn't Bill Clinton apologizing for that glaring undressing of Ariana Grande?
Because the Clintons never apologize, you know that.
Oh.
What did you think about Ariana Grande's outfit, by the way?
You know what I described it off air, that you're not letting me describe on air, because
correct,
you're trying to make sure I don't get in trouble on a Tuesday after a long holiday weekend.
I think that's sporting of
it
me.
It was wildly inappropriate to the point where I wouldn't even wear that at a rock concert. You are at a funeral. Below the knee or below, that is the standard rule. You don't wear jeans to a funeral, and you don't wear a short dress or whatever that thing. It was puffy out, and then it kind of went up near the vajayjay area.
Whoa, hello.
It was very inappropriate.
If she was your daughter, would you have grabbed her by the ear and taken her right out of that funeral?
She would have been able to walk into that funeral.
Yeah.
Everybody else was dressed appropriately. Jennifer Hudson looked gorgeous, was appropriate, had a beautiful hat on.
She's a great singer. Amazing Grace. That was excellent.
It was excellent. See, you watched it too.
I watched a little bit of it. Yeah. I mean, I like the...
It's more of a celebration.
It should be. And I like the musical performances too. Who doesn't like to hear Jennifer Hudson sing?
I wanted to stay tuned to see what she was wearing, because Aretha Franklin had three costume changes during her week-long celebration. She wore a red for her sorority colors, and had the red stiletto heels and her legs crossed in the casket. And then she had a gold dress on, and then she was buried for the last day. She had a beautiful full-length gown on, like a queen, because she's the queen of soul.
With respect to Ariana Grande, again, if she were your daughter, would you tell her that, young lady, you actually do have more tears left to cry? See how current I am?
See, you are.
Aren't you impressed?
I am.
I'm like Eddie and Joe Ball wrapped into one.
Who is she engaged to?
Some dink from Saturday Night Live.
That's not going to last. They should call off the engagement now. I mean, she could do so much better than that guy.
I mean,
guy.
I respect guys who hit above their weight class. I really do.
Okay.
I think it's fantastic.
Go heavy or go home, you know?
I'm just saying to that soon-to-be anonymous comedian, you know, boy.
Ouch.
Get the best prenup you can get, because you're going to need a parachute. Okay, I'm just saying that is not a round trip you're on.
It's so embarrassing.
Yeah. With respect to Aretha Franklin's funeral,
yes,
with the costume changes,
I love it.
Should do a Get Low for you.
What do you mean?
Did you ever see the movie Get Low?
No.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Sorry. Who's in it? What's it about?
Bill Murray, Robert Duvall. Robert Duvall plans his own funeral, and because he wants to see who shows up.
Oh.
So,
So he fakes his death and plans a funeral to see who shows up at his funeral and what they say.
Yeah.
That's kind of clever.
That's really good.
Did he learn?
All kinds of stuff. You have to see the movie. But costume changes for you. How would you like your funeral to be? Because we could perhaps fake it and see if anybody shows up. I mean, other than everybody you went to prom with, which would fill a church.
I need the prom dress there, the blue prom dress.
Are you multiple dress changes?
No, I only wore one, the light blue one.
Eight times?
Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of money.
Oh, come on.
Make the guy
buy it.
Make the what?
Make the guy buy it, especially when you're an old lady and you still have teenagers taking you to prom. The least they could do is buy you a dress.
No, I wear the same dress. But I'd like a Blaine volleyball there.
Blaine Bond. All right, hold on. Let me make a list. You got your blue dress.
All, every player who ever wanted to start, that's when you show up.
Blue dress, boy, blue dress. You know, the blue dress.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of
poisoned. It's a light blue dress.
It's been soiled, okay, if you
well,
will.
Let's just call it a light blue dress.
A blue dress, Blaine volleyball. Do you want your children to attend?
Maybe. I want Bunky there.
All right, your bulldog. Okay. All right. What else?
You can go, I guess.
All right.
Oh, pallbearers.
I can be an usher. All right. Got it.
You would be the worst at my church. Oh, no. You're not being an usher at my church.
Oh.
Oh, no.
I won't be allowed in your church. I'll be Trump.
No, Bonnie would let you in, but you'd have to sit in the back.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
All right, what
the conservative section of one.
The conservative section.
My funeral?
Yes. Let's do yours. What do you want to wear? Stilettos?
Mine should be just, you know, like the Monty Python sketch. Just bring out your dad, throw me on a cart, and let him take me off to the home. I don't care.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
That's Ariana Grande for you kids out there. Dan and Amy, and we're talking about Aretha Franklin's funeral. Railing to the defense of Bishop Charles Ellis, who is getting unfairly treated by the media jackals over a completely innocent embrace and innocent joke with respect to Grande. And then Amy decided to go a different direction and continue to sully his name. So perhaps an apology is owed in studio. But don't take it from me. Don't take it from me. Take it from Patty on the Northwest Side. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, Charlie Ellis was the one, he's already apologized, but the one Amy was referring to is a different reverend.
Yeah.
That one is Jasper Williams, so it's two different guys. The one with Ariana Grande has apologized. The other one is the black on black, you know, that's the one they're demanding the apology to.
Yeah that's
and
right.
I,
Thanks,
I apologize
Patty.
To Bishop Ellis because I was wrong. It was Bishop
I don't know if he's
Reverend.
Gonna accept it.
It was Reverend Jasper Williams who spoke at Aretha's father's funeral, so they thought they were safe. They're in the tree of trust, and he said this.
As I look in your house, there are no fathers in the home no more. Where is your soul? 70% of our households are led by our precious, proud, fine black women. But as proud, beautiful, and fine as our black women are, one thing a black woman cannot do, a black woman cannot raise a black boy to be a man.
Ooh, and then Stevie
Wonder. I'm sorry I just tuned in for the musical performance. This guy is on point. Absolutely.
Do black lives matter? Let me answer like this. No, black lives do not matter. Black lives will not matter. Black lives ought not matter. Black lives should not matter. Black lives must not matter until black people start respecting black lives and stop killing ourselves. Black lives can never matter.
And Stevie Wonder yelled out, Black Lives Matter. Yeah. I don't know if you heard him in the background.
Keep it down, Stevie. Yeah. The Reverend is speaking. If he wants an amen, he can get one from me. How good is that? Tony in Mundelein, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, sir. I just really didn't care about everything else, but you had Farrakhan sitting in the front row.
Oh, yeah, Farrakhan
right next
there.
To Ray's Vader.
Right.
Seriously?
Farrakhan next to who?
Farrakhan was sitting next to Reverend Jackson, who was sitting next to Bill Clinton.
Right. And next to Clinton and next to Sharpton.
Oh, yeah. Sharpton.
Yeah, take
was
a look
too,
at the picture.
Yeah. Well,
that was crazy. I mean, you're talking about Queen of Soul and you have Nazis there?
Well, she planned
Fine.
Her funeral. That's
you know,
what she
I'm
wanted.
Done with this.
Thanks for the call,
but you
Tony.
You should see people in the orchestra behind her when he was speaking. They were. The look of horror on
Love
their faces.
Love it.
No, it was poignant. He got
Wait,
his message across.
What's the left admonish us to do? Speak truth to power? It seems like Reverend Jasper Williams did just that. God bless him.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Colin Kaepernick is the new face of Nike. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. By the way, this is part of a new recurring segment called The Intersection. The intersection of sports and politics we're going to do. And
well, we have to have an open for it.
Well, Justin's working on that. I sprung it on him this morning.
The intersection.
The intersection of sports and politics, very much like the intersection of arrogance and ignorance. It is a dangerous intersection, and so we must police it, and so we shall. We start with Colin Kaepernick and this Nike ad campaign. In connection with the 30th anniversary of the iconic Just Do It campaign.
It's been 30 years?
Yeah.
Don't you feel old?
Not as old as you do.
okay, thanks.
The ad features Colin Kaepernick. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. One response, in terms of the firestorm of response that this has generated, I thought was quite good. This is just a random person, but I like what she has to say about this, or one way to approach it. The funeral for all my Nike products will be tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Services will be held at the Salvation Army. All items will be replaced by Under Armour, who has always given my police officer husband a discount anyway. And she points out Under Armour's policy with respect to first responders. So are you going to schedule a funeral for all of your Nike products in the wake of this Colin Kaepernick campaign? Or is this just a shoulder shrug? It's to be expected from corporate sissies at Nike, like corporate sissies and so many other C-suites. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, are you going to – they have Colin Kaepernick shoes coming out in the fall,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Socks, apparel. I mean, is anybody going to buy that? He hasn't played since, what, 2016? He hasn't hit the field?
Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. So believe in communism, which is what he does. That's what he advocates. He's a big Fidel Castro fan.
Yeah, he wore a Fidel Castro T-shirt to the Miami game, which, are you kidding me? You're in Miami? Talk about pouring, you know, salt on a wound.
This is great. This is like the response to gun violence in Chicago. Do something. Something. Do you want to define the something? Believe in something. Is believing in freedom the same thing as believing in despotism? Or are there moral differences? Apparently there's not.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. Are people going to hand in or burn their Nike attire?
I mean, it's tough because MJ is with Nike, and so I love getting the Jordans. I guess I won't be anymore. Here's the thing. Sacrifice everything? I'm sorry, what has Colin Kaepernick sacrificed? He sacrificed as much of his pro football career as I sacrifice of my pro football career. He was done.
Right. The statistics aren't there.
Maybe.
The yardage, passes thrown are not there.
When he started making a public spectacle of himself, maybe he could have caught on with some team to hold a clipboard. He was not a starting quarterback in the NFL, and he wasn't going to be. Sacrificed everything?
Well, that's how he feels he sacrificed his career because he started kneeling during the national anthem to protest police violence.
I'm not interested in his feeling. I'm interested in the facts. In 2014, he signed a contract extension for $126 million, with as much as $54 million guaranteed, $13 million fully guaranteed. Now, he ultimately walked from that contract and declared free agency, but not before he got his guaranteed cash. Sacrificed everything? His net worth is north of $20 million. Sacrificed everything? ESPN Courage Award. Nike ad campaign. What, I'm sorry,
Explain to me what Colin Kaepernick has sacrificed. To use that word, I mean, the indulgence of this culture and leftist icons, apparently he is, like Kaepernick. It's disgusting. Sacrifice? Sacrifice is a term we use for people who give their lives in service to this country, not for snot-nosed ignoramuses who got $20 million bucks and could have had a lot more if he could get out of his own way to play a game.
A game. It's a football game.
And then when he's done, because he so desires the limelight and or he's brainwashed by his Black Lives Matter girlfriend, some combination of all of the above, because he's his own god, he goes on this goofy, making a spectacle of himself. This is what sacrifice looks like in 21st century America?
His mom, his dad don't like that he was kneeling during the national anthem.
Yeah, those Black Lives Matter, the guy who was adopted by a white family in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's...
I mean, this is such a scam, and I mean, it's incredible to me. Obviously, Nike doesn't do ad campaigns with their ad agencies and whatnot without doing market testing, so they must think this is good for business. But here's what I would say about that.
It's going to backfire in their faces.
Well, here's what you can market test. You can focus group. You can generate a feedback loop. But sometimes if the reaction from those opposed is so vociferous and unrelenting, it sort of blows the curve. And people are easily cowered. We know this. Uh-huh. So if it becomes a shameful thing to wear Nike apparel, to buy Nike apparel, then whatever their market feedback was can go right out the window with Colin Kaepernick, as far as I'm concerned. It's going to be very interesting to see what the reaction is, because they obviously think that this is appealing to a demographic, younger urban demographic. That's where their future is. And if old fuddy-duddies like me don't like it, well, who cares?
Well, and that's what they said. So just keep in mind, he's been signed with them, Colin Kaepernick, since 2011, but they haven't used him, obviously. But they came out with a statement saying, "We believe Colin is one of the most inspirational athletes of this generation who has leveraged the power of sport to help move the world forward." So, and then he said, "We wanted to energize its meaning and introduce Just Do It to a new generation of athletes."
Is that what he's doing? Is that what Colin Kaepernick is doing, moving the world forward?
Moving
the world forward to what? To the Cuban model of government?
312-642-5600 is our Turnkey Debt Pro answer line. I don't know. I might have to think twice about buying Nike products. Might have to stick with Adidas. Because us moms, we buy a lot of stuff for our kids.
John in Hobart, Indiana.
Hi, good morning. I don't buy Nike. I don't play basketball. I don't play football. They're marketing to the people they want to sell to. So, I mean, if that's the guy they want to use, I really don't care. Bass Pro isn't going to use him as their advertiser,
Right.
What does it really matter? And as far as this Ariana Grande, I mean, I don't think this guy purposely touched this girl on live television.
No.
And who's watching this anyway? I mean, no one cares.
I don't
care about her. I don't care about that pastor. Well, regular America doesn't care about these people.
Well, okay, John.
I tend to disagree.
Thanks for the call. But, yeah, I understand Nike can use whoever they want. That's fine. That's not the issue. Don't pretend that culture doesn't matter. This argument from conservatives, like, I don't pay attention. I just live in my own cocoon. So, I don't care what they do in the NFL because I don't watch it. And I don't care what they do in music because I don't watch it. And I don't care what happens. Well, there's a whole swath of people who are influenced by people in the public eye, by celebrities, by athletes, by musicians and the like, no matter how ill-informed their views are. So it matters because it moves opinion, because it, despite what Charles Barkley said about not being a role model, a lot of young people still look to people in the public eye as role models, politicians too, unfortunately. And, I go back to what Jasper Williams said. They should be looking for role models at home. Unfortunately, a lot of homes are absent role models as well. So you can say it. They can use whoever they want. Of course they can. That's not the issue. The issue is impact. And so should it be met? It's one thing when Colin Kaepernick's doing it as a one-off on the sidelines. It's another thing when it gets amplified and you've got Nike's marketing power behind it. You don't think that has influence? If you don't, you're being naive. Kurt in Brookfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. You know, with 25 years in law enforcement, the way he's attacked law enforcement without backing up with any statistics, there's no way in the world I'll buy a Nike product ever again. There's other stuff I could buy. It's not that big a name brand. But for them just to throw that out there without addressing the issues that he claims against law enforcement when there's much greater issues when he looks at the south side of Chicago, I just find appalling for Nike to do this. And it's all about them just getting more money to sell more shoes.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Kurt. And, you know, look, Nike may be making a miscalculation. We'll see. Dick's Sporting Goods made a miscalculation when they overreacted to the Parkland shooting.
Right.
And now their sales have gone limp at Dick's. Derek in Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
Morning, guys. I hate to say this, but the way I interpret the campaign by Nike, besides Jordan, it may have been their most brilliant move as far as sales goes ever.
Really?
And well, and, you know, I'm 43. I have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old. And I think Nike's core customer is an age group that doesn't really get into politics. And I don't want to say that's completely true.
Well, they're being dragged into politics with this.
Well, when it comes down to it, though, if you find a shoe that fits and you know, and you find a shoe that you like the color, the advertising isn't really going to matter. You're going to justify it other ways. Like, well, okay, these are nice people at the store. I'm helping employ them by my purchase. I don't like Kaepernick's advertising, you know, being in the advertisements. But you know what? These people are good, and I like the shoe, so I'm going to buy it. So
yeah, okay.
I say that, but I think it's true. And how many will even remember this come you know Christmas time? I don't know.
Thanks for the call, Derek. I mean, I guess we'll see how long the campaign goes on, and if a lot of people just don't do it.
Oh, there's already people on social media burning Nike gym shoes.
Yeah. Mike in Crown Point, Indiana.
Morning, Dan, Amy.
Yep. Go ahead,
hey,
Mike.
Was it about 30 years ago when they had the big thing with Michael Jordan sneakers and all the poverty pimps, Jesse Jackson and Sharpton wanted Nike to cut them in on the profits? And the founder, I believe, is Phil Knight. He basically ran them out of his office. Evidently, he's not running the company anymore. I'm not sure, but
I find
that out of character for this guy.
I believe Phil Knight is still there. Thanks for the call, Mike.
People are cutting the swooshes portion of their socks. There's one Marine that said, "Get ready, Nike. Multiply this by millions. It's coming."
Uh-oh.
They say he hates veterans, and he's a pro cop killer.
That Marine might be put in the brig. In the modern context, you're not going to be allowed to criticize Nike because you're criticizing Colin Kaepernick, and that's a thought crime and a speech crime, hate crime. Jerry in Palatine.
Hey, I've got 3 pair of Air Monarchs right now, and I'm burning them all this afternoon, every single one. I'm done with Nike.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jerry.
The rubber kind of smells when it's on fire. I'm just saying.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Yes, let a professional do it. Philip in Blue Island.
You say let a professional do it. That is crazy. These people are burning these $100 gym shoes and these $60 and $70 jerseys. Yeah, more than that. But the fact that we're on the cusp of Van Dyke, who shot somebody 16 times, Laquan McDonald, and you talked about statistics a little while ago. A couple of weeks ago in Chicago, there were like 72 people shot. I think 7 to 11 people were killed.
13.
Zero arrests. Okay, oh, wow. And zero arrests, but a Chicago police budget of $1.5 billion.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, you all are getting upset about Kaepernick and getting upset about Nike wear.
Phillip,
it is ridiculous that it's borderline, for me, I'm going to let you finish, but it's borderline bigoted to me that, you know, this is such an issue when it's really about police brutality.
Philip,
that's what it's about.
Philip, we have spent as much time talking about crime in Chicago and police in Chicago and the criminal justice system in Chicago as VON. We have talked about Laquan McDonald. We talked about the Van Dyke case. We previewed it, with jury selection beginning this week, last week, at least twice.
Today.
Including with the FOP president. I mean, I mentioned and I read the letter from Tim King at Urban Prep. Urban Prep, one of the schools doing it right in Chicago, it should be scaled, Lawndale, who just lost. The school's been open 15 years. 16 of his young men, all black kids, all black men, 100% graduation rate, 100% college acceptance. 16 in 15 years have been killed in the streets, in the neighborhoods. And with this guy, this young man, I think his name was Montavious Dixon, if I'm remembering correctly.
So why
the most recent
about
one. Because we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can cover more than one topic.
Why lie about Kaepernick?
I'm not. Why lie about it? I'm not lying
about
Kaepernick.
What he's doing about his protest. It's not against the flag. It's not against the soldiers. It's not against the Marines. It's not against none of that. It's not even against the United States government. It's against police brutality.
What is that?
When you take a knee during the national anthem, people who have served this country are offended.
Also, Philip.
But even back in the 40s. Go ahead, Dan.
Just explain to me his comments and his choice of dress in support of Fidel Castro and Che Guevara. What does that have to do with the police, domestic police?
I mean, if somebody, a lot of people see those people as freedom fighters. And Kaepernick has the right to see him as a freedom fighter.
Do you?
I mean, come on. When you have a president that's sucking up to Putin,
do you think Castro as a freedom fighter?
It was against American. Actually, at the time they were communists, so I don't actually. And so it was a couple of things going on that maybe I don't know about. Uh-huh. But how was Castro's
50-year reign in Cuba? How'd that work out?
Well, how much about the 50-year embargo on the Cuban people by the United States?
I see. What happened in Cuba is the United States' fault. Got it. Thanks for the call, Philip. The other Philip on the Northwest side.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy. That guy's confused. You know, it's a real shame how Nike's a multi-billionaire company, and so are all these other sports companies. They could very easily put jobs in every major city, and they don't. Then you got idle hands or the devil's work. If kids got no jobs, if men don't have no jobs, almost all of our shootings, almost all of them, are over drug dealing or drug territory. And it's not hard to put jobs inside major cities, especially when you have, like, you know, Democrat politicians that are supposed to be pro-labor and for the black community. I mean, if I was Michael Jordan or Colin Kaepernick, if I wanted to protest, I'd say, hey, listen, Nike, I'm not going to endorse any more of your products until you put a job back in my people's city.
Right.
You know, I can't understand it. There's not one.
Thanks for the call, Phil. Appreciate it. Closing out our intersection inaugural segment, Hawk. Ready for Hawk Harrelson?
Yeah.
I used to watch LeBron James, but no more, saying that he wished athletes would, quote, keep their nose out of politics and just play because people didn't come to hear their opinions on politicians. Yes! Put it on the board, Hawk Harrelson. And that's the intersection between sports and politics.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Some call me the sage from South Central. Others call me the czar of common sense. But you can call me Larry Elder. And you're invited to join me tonight starting at 7 right here on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So shutdown theater came to the Kennedy yesterday, and this time there were arrests, a dozen people arrested. Seems like there were two different orders. State police had an order to arrest. Chicago police had an order to stand down. Why the difference this time?
Well, yeah, here's Sergeant Riccio from Chicago Police.
We can never allow an airport to be shut down. There's federal implications. There's federal charges involved for anybody that would try to obstruct commerce at an airport or people coming and going. We have a holiday weekend in place. We're not going to let the airport get shut down.
Yeah, they were not going to let the airport get shut down, and they did not. As people attempted, and the Reverend's going to join us to talk about this, but as people attempted to get onto the Kennedy at Cumberland, they were they arrested 12 people, each given a $120 fine.
All right. Making his one call from jail to join us now is Reverend Greg Livingston. He's the president and founder of the Coalition for New Chicago. who organized this protest as he did the Lakeshore one a couple of weeks back. Greg, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Dan and Amy. It's great to be on the phone with you.
Are you are you all right in there, or did they release you?
Oh, no, they released me yesterday. Oh, okay. They released us yesterday, yes, sir.
All right. So how do you think it went?
Well, you know, I think it went well. By that I mean, you know, just the threat of it and everything. We saw the Kennedy slow down and you know, things were kind of clogged up. And then, you know, after they arrested us, well, we prayed for rain and we had the flood, you know, and O'Hare was flooded and everything else. And so we think it went well. We think we made the point, so to speak.
Yeah, well, O'Hare was shut down for a while. I mean, you're right. So you guys prayed for rain for that to happen?
It's better than praying for frogs or locusts, I suppose.
Without a doubt. We prayed for whatever help we could get, and we got some help. So that was a good deal.
All right, so how many people would you estimate were there? We know 12 got arrested, but I drove by because I had to go by O'Hare to get to an event that I had to attend.
Yeah, Greg, I don't know how to break it to you. Amy is a little cross with you. You delayed her
12 minutes
from getting to the boat regatta at Oak Park Country Club. So, I mean, you know, that's a real crime against humanity that you have to account for.
I'm really
That country. Uh-huh.
What were you going to say about the country club? I'm not a snob. I drive a used minivan, but I did have to go.
Yeah, she had a boat regatta. She doesn't have time for your Chicago violence blather. She's on her way to a boat regatta at a swimming pool at the Oak Park Country Club.
Yeah, we can never, you know, really help or help someone that's the country club class is a whole another class altogether. So I apologize for that, Amy.
It's okay. It was canceled because of the rain that you prayed for.
He sounds contrite. Yeah.
But how many people would you say were there? Like, get the media out of there, because I saw a lot. What I saw was a lot more media than protesters.
Well, you know, we saw a lot more everything than protesters. You know, I mean, to be honest, I was at the front, and then once we got started, because we had like three buses, we were waiting to get there, and so they called me. They were stuck in traffic, so we decided just to go on out. And you know, I think maybe we had maybe 50 to 100 people or something like that, you know. And but that was enough in terms of they were able to make it down onto the expressway and to kind of stretch it out.
Did you have any conversation with City Hall, the fifth floor, Tiny Dancer, before this shutdown yesterday, this protest yesterday, in terms of what was going to happen if you went forward with it?
Not in terms of what would happen if we decided to go ahead and do the Kennedy piece, but they did have their black community liaison, Vance Henry. He hit us up about having a face-to-face meeting with him, and we rejected that and said we wanted a face-to-face meeting with the mayor and his advisor, Michael Sachs.
Now, Superintendent Johnson wasn't there. Instead, they sent out the Deputy Superintendent Riccio. Do you know why Johnson wasn't there?
Well, you know, he and I went to high school and grammar school together. Maybe he just didn't want to have any conflict with an old friend. But, you know, but for us, really, you know, one of the larger questions, and afterwards, you know, I heard Major Byrd's explanation, was, you know, what was so different about this federal expressway, you know, than Dan Ryan? What was so different? Why couldn't we do it, you know, keep going? Why did we have to be stopped, you know? So
yeah, I think
that was one of the bigger questions.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, actually. They sort of set the precedent with the Dan Ryan, so I'm not particularly persuaded by the police response either. Here's the thing. You know, you got some people upset because it's a spectacle and it's inconvenient. And then all of a sudden, some Chicagoans become fiscal conservatives. You know, they're worried about a few hundred thousand dollars in police associated police costs for a city that's got $30 billion in unfunded police and fire pension liabilities. So, I mean, it's a bit comical. And but people pick up the small things. Sometimes they don't see the forest for the trees. And so what is the forest here? Give us the big picture of what the goal of this campaign is and the purpose of your organization, Coalition for a New Chicago.
Sure. You know, and we're not finished in terms of what we're doing and getting these demands met. We need to, we think the people need some immediate wins, and we want to get those. You know, Rahm and Harold Washington, I can say that, are two very different kind of mayors. Harold was accessible, and he ran to the people. Rahm was inaccessible. He runs from the people. So we have to keep chasing him, you know. As long as he's mayor, as long as he's getting the paycheck, we think we can help in terms of reducing this violence, this things of that nature. And, you know, and the point of doing something like this, again, was we felt that we needed to hit commerce in order to get that kind of attention, which is also, again, why, you know, we had the kind of response that we did on yesterday, you know, because I had heard things, Dan and Amy, about, you know, the Hyatt people were meeting, the airlines, they were burning up the mayor's phone because the airline schedules are inflexible. And so, you know, I think we chose a right target in terms of trying to end this tale of two cities. I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, so just specifically, though, what does winning look like? That, you know, get a couple of wins. Give me an example of what a possible short-term win is other than deposing Tiny Dancer in the February of next year, which is a short term. It could be a short term win, but other than that,
sure. You know, we had demands for construction jobs. You know, in terms of workforce, that they'd be 20% African American. Looking for funding for Black-led anti-violence programs, or giving money to Black men to help Black boys. You know. Just economic investment on the south and west sides that's commensurate with the investment on downtown and the north side in terms of funding and partnerships. You know, so things that can really make a difference in the now to work at that. You know, that $1.5 billion slush fund that the mayor has. You know, instead of having $55 million that was slated for the west side go to David Pier. Let it go to the west side to do what it needs to do. So,
yeah, but Greg, on this matter of, you know, investments on the west and south side, you know, public funding of stuff on the west and south sides, or anywhere for that matter, businesses don't want to go where it's not safe. So it seems to me you've got it. You've got the cart in front of the horse. Until it's safe, there's no amount of money that will incentivize most businesses, many businesses, clearly based on what we see in the south and west sides, from locating there. And so until government abides its first responsibility to provide for public safety, why is it on business or why is it on the taxpayers to throw bad money after bad money that we've done? We've tried this, you know, sort of economic development, public-private partnerships, all of the bromides about investing in places that lack economic opportunity. And it seems to me we continue to put the cart before the horse.
I think that, you know, there's been such a paucity of investment on the south and west sides that some new blood, some nutrients, you know, pumped into the veins of the community would make a huge difference. But I do agree with you. You know, we've tried to monetize the solution, if you will, in so many different ways over and over again. But I think that there has to be a real involvement of the community. Which is not easy. It's not easy. You know, one of the reasons we do what we do too, Dan, is that we try to inspire the uninspired. And it's not easy to inspire the uninspired. So we try to have some kind of action like we did yesterday or actions in the past to give people some kind of a spark, you know, to say, come on, you can do this. Let's go. And again, you know, I've passed with some of the most challenged areas of the city. And there's nothing easy about trying to inspire people who have given up, you know, but it's something that we have to do. And so even in terms of, you know, investment, you know, I think some of these areas are so bad that it's, you know, it's always the driest wood that catches on fire first. And I think that some real investment can really make a difference in terms of inspiring the people in that community.
Yep. So, Reverend, one thing that people never know. So you get arrested with 11 other people. Then what happens? Did you have to pay the $120 fines, and where'd they take you, and how soon were you released?
Yeah. They took us away somewhere to like a temporary spot that they had. And then, you know, they went through, checked their IDs for warrants and things like that. And then, they told us what we were charged with, and that we didn't have to pay yesterday, but you know, you have the option of paying or going to court or whatever on that. So But the trooper was treated us all with great respect. You know, it wasn't like a 68 Democratic convention piece. Even though one of the guys that was arrested with us, he was with the National Guard at the 68 convention.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, he was 75, and so wow, he was there, right? 50 years ago.
So what's next? What are you doing? Midway, where are you going with this?
We have something planned. I'm trying to pull it together, and before I really announce it, I think it'll be something that will surprise many people, because, you know, we're not just a one-trick pony. We realized that we had to have a series of events. We started really back on July 16th, you know, in front of the police station, CPD, and then on that 18th, we had a little small protest on Mandela's birthday, and then from there we went to Lakeshore Drive and now to here. And so we realized that we're building an infrastructure, if you will, in terms of challenging and countering the powers that be. And so the next piece, hopefully, I can have some things together by Thursday or Friday that we can let, you know, the public know that what we're doing here. And we're trying to do something constructive, even though people see that these marches as being destructive. Some do. Others get the point that, you know, it's just the cry of the people.
Well, I'll tell you, I know you can't disclose it, but can you give me an indication? Are you finally going to go to the North Shore and shut down a Gordon Lightfoot concert at Ravinia, or interrupt a polo match at Neutra High School, or protest in front of Lester Crown's house or Byron Trott's house? I mean, are we finally going to get there where the actual power and money resides in this state?
Yeah, that's why we want to sit down with Emmanuel and Michael Sachs, you know, the actual power. And because somebody's holding those purse strings. And I would say we wish we could do all of the above, but we'll just stick with having the conversation with Emmanuel and Sachs for right now.
I mean, if you wanted to, like, go up to the Neutra High School stables and free the horses, I mean, I might be game for that. So, I mean, just think about it.
Mastermind for you, I will. Yes, indeed.
He is Reverend Greg Livingston, president and founder of the Coalition for a New Chicago. Greg, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
I'm Lou.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and of course, several important eulogies given at Senator John McCain's funeral service over the weekend. Presidents of the United States, Barack Obama, George W. Bush. But of course, the most poignant one was Meghan McCain's, his daughter. I thought it was well-crafted eulogy. She went political. And my reaction in these instances when somebody loses a loved one, clearly somebody that they had a very close relationship with, as it was evident Meghan McCain had a very close relationship with her father, John. You can grieve how you want to grieve. I really don't want to, you know, provide a review or critique of it, but I know that there are some who will, with respect to at least the political content that she offered. And this was her choice, her prerogative, but she took the opportunity with the world watching to clearly take a shot at President Trump.
He was a great man. We gather here to mourn the passing of American greatness. The real thing, not cheap rhetoric from men who will never come near the sacrifice he gave so willingly, nor the opportunistic appropriation of those who live lives of comfort and privilege while he suffered and served. He was a great fire who burned bright.
And
it was political. I mean, but there is some truth to that.
And she also sort of... I don't know if she was taking a shot. Maybe she thought she was taking a shot at Trump. It sounded like she was taking a shot at Cuomo to some extent, right? When she said America was always great.
Right. Yeah. So maybe I don't think the public should be hard on her. She is grieving, and she was very, very close to her father. Also there, President Obama, McCain wanted him to speak at his funeral, and Bush, don't worry, would try to be, you know, insert a little humor.
Back in the day, he could frustrate me. And I know he'd say the same thing about me. But he also made me better.
Yeah, he also recounted a story before his final debate with John Kerry, mm-hmm. where he was the final debate of his political career, George W. Bush's, in 2004, and he was a little nervous. And in the green room before the debate, he's kind of like trying to just channel and find his inner balance. Eyes closed, he opens up his eyes and he says, McCain 6 inches from his face, saying, "Relax." That was pretty funny. More on John McCain's life and times and funeral service and the politics that surround it, we're pleased to be joined by another American hero. This is a gentleman I had the pleasure to get to know a little bit about 15 years ago when he actually ran in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. This was in the 2004 cycle. He was a prisoner of war in Vietnam for 6.5 years as well in Hanoi. He was a fighter pilot who was shot down and injured. He was Captain John Borling at the time, but then he went on to a storied military career. I mean, the awards that earned are too numerous to list, but they include a Silver Star, 2 Bronze Stars, and 2 Purple Hearts. General John Borling joins us. General, thanks so much for making the time. We appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, nice to be with you this morning from bucolic Michigan, it turns out.
Yes, well, we miss you in Illinois. By the way, I should mention, too, also a man of letters. I mean, during his time in captivity, he wrote a collection of poems that he turned into a book called Taps on the Walls.
It's good of you to mention that. The actual construction of that book, you may recall, Dan, was something I composed mentally. There was nothing to write with.
Right. Yes.
So,
right.
So I just carried that stuff around with me and tapped it through the walls. That's the name of the book. And in fact, Megan, in her words, talked about tapping through the walls as you were talking about the eulogy. Others memorize them, too, as an exercise in keeping mentally active. I taught French through the walls. I learned Spanish through the walls. we were in isolation or semi-isolation for years, as you may know. And then in 1970, a little later, they started putting us together in big groups for various reasons. And it was there that I lived with John for a while.
It's just remarkable. I mean, if you can tell us about that experience in captivity with McCain.
Well, John was, over the years, what you see is what you get. You got a guy who did so much, created so much admiration from so many. On the other hand, was an abject failure and incurred enmity from so many. So it was a pretty normal life for a guy who's high profile. And I think most of us look at our lives or look in the mirror on a much lesser scale, certainly for me. I can see the same thing, that you go through life, you stub your toe, you stand up, you keep marching. You try to do things that are important for God and country. And we had a perfect example of last night in Michigan.
What's a perfect example?
And it was almost if John McCain was present, I mean, in terms of the spirit. And that is, we had a tornadic-like storm come through our area. Trees down on top of houses, people unable to get out of their houses, cars squashed. I mean, it's going to be in the paper, I'm sure, tomorrow, that big band of storms that came through here. We had one like it 35 years ago. And the same thing happened. All the power's off. Power's still off. It was chainsaws and getting people tarps over roofs where homes had been damaged or neighbors. And it was a great sense of well-being in the neighborhood. And we're up here. Power lines are down. We banded together with food last night and had an outdoor get-together. And this is the kind of spirit that I think John wanted to see, not only on the local level, what we all want to see on the local level, but we want to see on the national level as well.
When you two were prisoners of war with others, and you finally were in, you know, either the same room where you were able to talk face to face. What was he like? Just tell us about his character and his demeanor.
Oh, he, you know,
cheerleader, was he inspiration?
Well, I write poetry, as you know, this book, Taps on the Walls, and buried it for 40 years. And then John did the foreword to it and was one of the motive forces saying, hey, you got to publish that stuff that you conceived up there. But John had a spirit, an effervescent spirit. He had a great sense of humor and a great outlook and optimism. You know, we had optimists and pessimists up there. Are you familiar with that?
Very. Yes.
Yeah, well, the pessimists thought we were going to die up there, and they weren't even going to send our bodies home. But the optimists were convinced they would send our bodies home. That's very funny. That's either a Borling original or that,
You don't know what to laugh at. I mean, it's gallows humor, but
Well, it gets you through every time, yes, except once. But who's counting? So the first thing is that resiliency and that sense of forward looking and but a great sense of humor. And in the end, I think that's one of the marks of public men that we look for, is that depreciating sense of humor, that thought that you don't take yourself too seriously, and yet you do serious business, serious work, and you try to advance the cause of the country. I'm sitting up here reminding myself that all those who favor huge government and socialism, you know what they used before they used candles?
What?
Electricity.
Let me ask you this, though, about the POW experience. Much is made of McCain choosing not to go home when he was given the opportunity to do so. How inspirational was that decision that he made?
Very. We had a rule that was tapped through the walls, through the chain of command, that nobody went home without nobody went home early without express approval by the chain of command. And we wanted to go out with the sick and wounded first and the people that were up there the longest. And John, because of his extreme injuries, notwithstanding the fact that he had a certain notoriety as the son of a SINCPAC commander, the admiral in charge of the Pacific, if you will, was put under a good deal of pressure, especially as the years went by, to accept early release, and he was steadfast and rejected that. There were some early releases. We did not, I think as a group, we were not proud of them. We did not sanction them, save in one case, and that was a fellow by the name of Doug Hegdal, who was a seaman, basic, who fell off a ship in the Tonkin Gulf and was swimming around and got picked up by Vietnamese authorities or fishermen, and they thought this guy was a CIA agent swimming to shore to do something outrageous, and they tortured the hell out of him until they figured out he was just, you know, kind of a basic seaman, because it was reported in the paper. And Doug Hegdal, this was before our names were public, memorized, as we all did, all the names that were in the system, passed through the walls, and he was offered the opportunity to go home early, and he got the blessing of senior leadership and went out with his head held high and took all our names out so people would know we were alive.
And you stay close.
Wow, that's interesting. Wow. Yes.
You stay close.
John resisted that to the end and took a lot of grief. I mean, the early years, as you know, were horrific in terms of isolation or semi-isolation and brutal treatment. It never approached Geneva Convention standards, but it got up to something more tolerable in the 70s and beyond, or we never would have made it. So the object, again, wasn't to survive as much as it was to survive with honor. We wanted you guys to be proud of us. And that, looking back over those many years, I think if you look at the accomplishments and the attempts of advancing the cause of America, by that group, in different ways, every guy has left footsteps that can be traced, because we committed to try to do that over time. I'm working on something now called Service Over Self America,
SOS America that I believe has a way of kind of nation building in America and uses the military as a launch point. We can talk about that at a later time if you
Yeah, we will. And we honor you for your service, and what you went through is just, I mean, you're a true hero, and so is Senator John McCain. When I lived in Arizona, he was my senator too, but...
You're very generous. That's a big term. I've served with some and stood in the shadow of others, but it's not a mantle I would choose to assume.
Right.
But thank you for kind words. This, I think John's example is going to go on to be with us for a time. But in the end, we've got to focus on the here and now. We've got some big things coming up in November in terms of the midterms, and the political process goes on. And we, the people, have a chance to express ourselves and ask, in fact, demand from government the kind of responsiveness to national concerns and needs, whereby the respect for the individual and the equality of opportunity is respected. So I'm no less passionate about the future of America today than I was yesterday or 40 years ago.
Do you have any comment, speaking of kind of service over self and the future, and as well as the here and now, any comment on our politics in the context of the eulogies that were provided McCain over the weekend, and just kind of in general with a look ahead to the midterms?
Well, again, I think families are entitled to expressions of grief and expressions of, you know, it's like you write a paper 20 years ago and you go back and look at it today and you cringe sometimes, or the things that you said or done. But Barney Frank, God love him for all of his inconsistencies, used to say, you know, I don't always agree with everything I say. And I think that's an apt quote. But my concern about the political system is that we have, over time in America, hundreds of years, created a circumstance where politicians are entrenched. And John favored term limits. In fact, the night he made his speech at the Biltmore in a gracious way, recognizing the presidency of the election just over with President Obama, you know, I know considered seriously. We chatted about it, about, you know, that's it. I'm going to retire and become a senior statesman. But the lure of the Senate and the thought that he could have greater impact kept him in that chair. But I think if he could have gotten term limits from top to bottom, federal, state, local, somehow inscribed into the law of the land, that he would have gone for that. And all the arguments about, well, you're going to let staff rule things anyway, if you really know about it, and you can have equal circumstances where staff turns over. I mean, it's a tough job, congressional staff or at the executive branch or judicial branch, for that matter, and people float in and out. But I'm a believer that people who are long in office ought to leave, especially those people who stood up to the electorate and said, gee, just elect me for a few terms and then I'll go away. And then they don't.
Yeah.
And I view that as a breaking of faith, big time. So if there's one thing we can do as a people, I think, is to vote out those who have been in for a long time in favor of new blood.
Well, then nowhere is that more pressing than Illinois, that's for sure. He is General John...
41, you know, I know Mike Madigan a little bit, but 41 years is not political or democratic accountability. It's bloody tyranny. And if we as a people don't understand that, then we get, and I'm the guy from Illinois, I'm not moving out of Illinois, just on the face, hell, the Communist Politburo didn't hang around that long. Not that I feel strongly on the matter.
Yeah, right. He is General John Borling, retired United States Air Force Major General. He was a POW for 6.5 years in Hanoi with John McCain. Whether he wants to be called one or not, he's an American hero, and we honor his service and the service of all those who were held captive with him and all those who served. General John Borling, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Talk to you again, Dan. Amy, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Judge Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing in the Supreme Court of the United States begins today. And you've had expected rhetoric from the expected sources. We expect some histrionics, a lot of talk about women's rights, specifically the only right the left seems to care about, which is the Supreme Court divined right, penumbras and emanations, to an abortion. Elizabeth Warren and the other erstwhile contenders for the 2020 nomination are out in force. But the handicapping right now is that Kavanaugh, absent some kind of major gaffe, has support of all of the Republicans. Ron Johnson, Senator from Wisconsin, said 30 years ago, Kavanaugh's confirmation would have been unanimous.
Wow.
Probably
how
so.
Times have changed.
Yeah, but it may be more than just the Republicans. You've got a lot of blue state Democrats under immense pressure to vote to confirm. You know, blue state Democrats facing re-election and facing fights for their political lives, like Joe Donnelly next door in Indiana. And if it's clear that all the Republicans are going to hold fast, I suspect you'll see some of those blue state Democrats fold in anyway, because what's the difference? It's a done deal. For more on the topic and the nature of these hearings, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend Randy Barnett, a Georgetown law professor and author of Our Republican Constitution, Securing the Liberty and Sovereignty of We the People. Randy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
What do you expect from the hearing this week?
Well, so far, it looks like it's going to be the usual. I mean, of course, today is going to be simply senator statements, and we'll get a sense of where the senators, especially the Democrat senators, are going to be coming from. By their opening statements, and then tomorrow the candidate, the nominee, testifies for probably 2 days before we hear from witnesses. And if we judge by the buildup, they haven't found something that is particularly embarrassing or damaging, although it's possible they found some stuff that they're not telling us about yet. It would be sort of uncharacteristic not to leak it. But it's quite possible they haven't leaked it.
Well, you're
going to get a bombshell.
You're clearly overlooking the AP Politics bombshell last week that on the campus of Yale, one Brett Kavanaugh preferred to play basketball rather than engage in the social justice mobocracy events on campus.
Oh, you're right. I did miss that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then, well, you have Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. He wants to delay the hearing. It's not going to happen. But because of last night's document dump, 42,000 pages of documents related to Brett Kavanaugh's time in the Bush White House. Do you think there's anything in there that could be, you know, inflammatory?
No, I don't. But I don't know what's in there. And they'll find out what's in there. Look, it is unprecedented to demand everything that a nominee has ever written or opined upon. If that were not the case, we would get all the bench memos and internal correspondence of judges who are being nominated to the Supreme Court. Why don't we get those? That would give us a clue to what they're thinking. Let's have their emails. How about all the judges' emails that they've ever sent to anybody? That would tell us something about how they're thinking. Of course, in the case of Brett Kavanaugh, some reporters went after his wife's emails as she's city manager in Virginia, in a town in Virginia. So, yeah, I mean, if what I would like to see happen, here's what I would like to see, and I don't think we're going to see it. I would like to see the Democrats have an honest debate about judicial philosophy, which is really what they did have around Robert Bork. They disagreed with his originalism, and they said so. Let them have a disagreement with Judge Kavanaugh's approach to interpreting the Constitution, and let him explain what it is, because I'd like to hear that explanation myself. And then let them explain what their own views are and how they differ, which is something you hardly ever hear them do.
Right. And also, I mean, since Kavanaugh clearly passes one of the Barnett rules there, have a record, he's got hundreds of opinions that he's written on a range of issues. So if you want to question my thinking on a particular opinion in a case I've decided, I decided as a judge that, fine, let's talk about that case. And that would be illustrative, too, because there are many issues that he's tackled as a federal judge. But that's probably going to be drowned out by a lot of accusations of wanting to put women in chains and the like we've heard from Elizabeth Warren.
Well, interestingly enough, today in the New York Times, Eric Posner, who's a law professor in your neck of the woods at University of Chicago Law School, and Emily Bazelon, a writer from the New York Times, have a piece in the Times about how Kavanaugh is not an originalist, because originalism leads to results that are not necessarily conservative, and he's a consistent conservative, so he deviates from originalism whenever conservatism requires him to do so. This is a very interesting new line of attack, because previous to this, we heard from Erwin Chemerinsky that originalism only leads to conservative results. And so if you're an originalist, it's because you want conservative results. And now we have two incompatible theories of criticism of originalism. One is that it leads to progressive results and conservative judges are not originalist enough. And the other one is it leads to conservative results and that's why they're originalist. So let's hear that debate. Let's find out what he says. For one thing, as you know from my last appearance on this show, I had concerns about his originalism, whether he was committed to originalism or not. So I want to hear him ask questions by Mike Lee and others about that, and I want to hear what his answers are myself. I'm pretty confident he's going to answer them a way I like them to be answered, but I want to hear him.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. It's a good point, and it would be interesting to have a substantive moment or two in the confirmation hearing. It would be novel in these times.
Yeah. What else do you think will be the Democrats' area of attacks? Is Roe versus Wade going to be prevalent?
Well, of course, that is going to be, there's going to be a lot of talk about that. That is exactly the question that he will refuse to answer. There's going to be talk about executive power. And we talk about the administrative state. I would like to hear his answers on those questions. I think he'll get an opportunity to give his views on general constitutional matters that don't involve specific cases and controversies. I predict he'll be well prepared to answer those questions and we'll learn something from them. Unlike many hearings, unlike Supreme Court arguments where what matters is the questions, not the answers, because you want to know where the justices are coming from. Here, because the senators generally don't, you know, they ask staff-prepared questions and don't do very many follow-ups, and they mainly give speeches. Really, what matters is the answers, not the questions. So I want to hear what he says and how he says it, and then I will judge him accordingly.
Yeah, consistent with that, too. I mean, a discussion of the boundaries between, consistent with the discussion of originalism and federalism, a discussion of the boundaries between the federal government and the state government would be illuminating, at least to me, too, when you've got issues like federal immigration law enforcement necessarily in the individual states.
Right. Of course, the closer you get to a specific question like that, the less he's going to answer it. And just a warning for your listeners and your viewers online, nominees have become extremely adept at avoiding answering questions like this. And every judge from Republican to Democrats, dating back to Justice Kennedy, who actually did answer a lot of questions, that's before the norm change, have mainly ducked most of these questions, and they have a particular way of doing so, and I suspect he's going to use some of those techniques as well.
Can you predict any Democratic senators that are going to vote in favor of Brett Kavanaugh?
I don't have any inside information, Amy. Sometimes here in D.C. I do have some inside information, but on this question I don't. So I just assume not predict. In your setup, you explained how some senators in purple states are going to want to, or maybe even in Trump states, are going to be concerned about this and may vote for him. They're under tremendous pressure from the Democratic base and donor class not to do that. So we'll just have to see who wins out.
All right. He is Randy Barnett, Georgetown law professor. The book, Our Republican Constitution, Securing the Liberty and Sovereignty of We the People. Randy, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Always good to be here. Thanks.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, this Uber driver in Florida has a remedy for road rage. His name is Robert Westlake. And so we got another shooting in Florida. A lot of invocation of stand your ground here. I'm not sure it's applicable. It's just sort of.
Did you see the video?
Yes, I did. The media trying to undermine that law. So
you did the right thing. I would have done the same thing. That guy charged at his vehicle with his gun drawn.
Yeah.
You've got to protect yourself. That's the essence of the stand your ground bill.
What?
Or law, excuse me.
Well, the driver, there's a. He's driving. This Uber driver is driving. The driver of the truck that followed him and then cut him off, Jason Beck. He thought his girlfriend, with whom he had had an argument earlier, was in this Uber vehicle, which is why he followed it and then cut him off.
Stupid.
He made threats as he approached Westlake's car, the Uber driver's car, yelling, "You know I got a pistol. You want me to effing shoot you?" And it looked like there was a gun in his hand.
I thought there was a gun in his
hand. Turned out to be a cell phone. But here's the dash cam video from the Uber driver. Him getting cut off.
Can I say something?
You want a pistol? You want me to shoot you?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm shooting you.
So Westlake shoots him. He calls 911 and reports what happened. Here's the story and the opinion of Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd, who is backing up the Uber driver 100%.
This is a justifiable homicide all day long.
Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd says the evidence shows the Uber driver, Robert Westlake, acted in self-defense. Jason Boak stopped in front of Westlake, got out of his truck, and pulled out a cell phone like a handgun as he approached the car.
Can I say something?
You want a pistol? You want me to shoot you?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Westlake called 911 as he tried to revive Boak.
He ran me off road. Jumped out of his vehicle. I couldn't get away. He came towards me, shouted he's got a pistol, reached for his waistband. I'm applying pressure to the wound. He's faintly breathing.
Police say it all started at a bar in Dundee, about 45 miles south of Orlando. Boak and his estranged girlfriend, Jessica Mazzarella, were drinking here when they got into a fight. Boak left, but was still watching the bar from a truck he borrowed from a friend. Police say Mazzarella was texting with Boak while also helping a bartender get an intoxicated customer into an Uber. Boak followed that Uber thinking Mazzarella was inside, but she wasn't. He told her he planned on assaulting the driver. But what police say Boak did not know was the driver, Westlake, was a recent police academy graduate and armed with a legal concealed handgun.
Here's a message for the hotheads of the community. Don't do that stuff. Good people carry guns, and they will shoot you a lot. Graveyard dead.
Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd.
Classic.
Quite colorful. Good people carry guns. They will shoot you a lot. Graveyard dead. And, I mean, I'm not laughing about this, and neither is Westlake, the Uber driver. He actually felt guilty about it, but he said to local news, he's the father of three with a baby on the way, and he thought to himself, who's going to take care of my family when a guy jumps out of the car, says he has a pistol, looks like he's got one, want me to shoot
and
you, it looks like he's got something in his hand.
Trailing him and cutting him off in traffic. The sad thing is his Uber and Lyft license has been revoked for the time being, so they're not sure if they're going to let him be an Uber driver or Lyft driver anymore. So he's not charged at all. But then he has to deal with that.
This is different than the Pinellas County case, the parking lot case, where that individual was ultimately charged, and we believe he should have been, as we discussed. This, I'm in 100% agreement with the Polk County Sheriff, Grady Judd, and his message, good people carry guns, and they'll shoot you a lot. So keep it cool.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We talked a little bit about John McCain's funeral service over the weekend with General John Borling, a fellow POW at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. Aretha Franklin's funeral service.
More of a celebration. A concert. You know, yeah. She is the original diva, the queen of soul.
Yeah, you had obviously a lot of stars of music as well as leftists in attendance. And so what the clergy had to say was interesting to me. Now, there's a couple of controversies.
Yeah.
One is...
we will get the names right this time.
Completely silly. And the other, in my view, the other is sort of important. The silly one is this Bishop Charles Ellis getting taken to task for two things. A little joke he made about Ariana Grande with her standing next to him. And then also how he embraced the diminutive Grande when she came up to the podium.
He put his arm around her, and it was his head.
That's a little high.
Yeah, because she's 4'9", I think, and he's taller. And he put his arm around her, and it was near her breast. So what? There's no touchy-squeezy-feely thing.
But Bishop Ellis, responding to the media jackals, apologized for his hand.
It would never be my intention to touch any woman's breast. I don't know. I guess I put my arm around her. I hugged all the female artists and the male artists, everybody that was up. I shook their hands and hugged them, and that's what we're all about in the church, about love. And again, maybe I crossed the border, or maybe I was too friendly or familiar, but again, I apologize.
It's totally innocent. It was certainly more innocent than Ariana Grande's funeral dress.
Oh, yeah. So she wore something wildly inappropriate. You never, ever, ever would wear this to a funeral, even for the Queen of Soul. She wore...
mini dress.
It was the vajayjay mini dress.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's what ladies call it now. That's what it is. And that is wrong at a funeral.
That's what ladies call it?
Look at Jennifer Hudson. Yeah, women call it that. All right.
All right.
Jennifer Hudson, appropriately dressed.
Yeah.
She looked gorgeous, had a, the appropriate length that should be knee high or lower for a funeral. And so people were looking at me. So picture this on stage. You have Louis Farrakhan sitting next to Reverend Jackson.
He's not a reverend.
There you go. Sitting next to Bill Clinton, sitting next to Al Sharpton. And Ariana Grande in this tiny is singing an Aretha Franklin song, and Bill Clinton couldn't help himself. I mean, that was the best eye candy I think he's seen in a long time. He undressed her with his eyes.
I thought it was a little unseemly when he got down on all fours trying to look up at her on stage.
Well, did he drop something? Was he picking up a pen or something?
Yeah.
Because he did seem to... Unless he's a contortionist or something, we don't know. But I mean, if
sure,
this Reverend
he and Jesse
Ellis
Senior were comparing notes.
If this Reverend Ellis has to apologize, shouldn't Bill Clinton apologize?
Well, I go back to the Washington Examiner editorial on the funeral. Why is Bill Clinton allowed in public? That's a great question. I don't know that we have a sufficient answer to it. Now, Ellis was also taken to task for this innocent joke he made about Ariana Grande. Remember, he's like the officiant of this 8-hour-long funeral, and he's trying to keep it lively and funny and lighthearted, and as you said, it's a celebration. So just chill out. So here's the Ellis joke with Grande standing right next to him, and then his apology for the joke, because of course some people looking to be offended were.
When I saw Ariana Grande on the program, I thought that was a new something at Taco Bell. I certainly want to apologize to Ariana and to her fans and to her family and to her entire community if what I said was taken the wrong way. And maybe it's just a joke that went bad, but when you're doing a program for 9 hours, you try to keep it lively, you try to make some funny references and what have you. I love everybody, and I certainly hope that she will forgive me. And the last thing I want to do is to be a distraction for Miss Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. This is all about her. It's not about me, and I'm so sorry.
Ellis is a class act. He should just say, oh, you come here, my little chalupa. I mean, who cares? Relax. Grow up.
Ariana Grande, a new item menu at Taco Bell.
Yeah. It's funny. It's not bad. I mean, it's totally innocent. Good grief.
And for him to offer an apology. All right. So he apologized. One man who's not apologizing is Reverend Jasper Williams. He spoke at Aretha Franklin's father's funeral. He's from Atlanta, friends with the family. So, again, it was an 8-9 hour celebration. And during his 52 minutes up there.
This was not so celebratory.
No, he didn't mention Aretha Franklin, didn't eulogize her once, didn't mention her. He talked about the black community.
As I look in your house, there are no fathers in the home no more. Mm. Where is your soul?
This isn't a problem.
70% of our households are led by our precious, proud, fine black women. But as proud, beautiful, and fine as our black women are, one thing a black woman cannot do, a black woman cannot raise a black boy to be a man.
Jesse Sr., would you like to respond to what Reverend Jasper Williams had to say?
People were looking around. I mean, members of the orchestra were just, what is going on?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Give family bandwidth to grieve when it came to McCain. You know, Meghan McCain's comments, just, you know, give her the space to say what she's going to say. But the choice of a speaker at Aretha Franklin's funeral, Reverend Jasper Williams, to provide some social commentary for the powers that be in attendance. Do you think it was appropriate or inappropriate? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line, because Reverend Williams wasn't done there.
No, he absolutely shocked the crowd, Dan, and Aretha Franklin's family when he said that black lives do not matter.
Do black lives matter? Let me answer.
Keep it down, Stevie.
Like this. No, black lives do not matter. Black lives will not matter. Black lives ought not matter. Black lives should not matter. Black lives must not matter until black people start respecting black lives and stop killing ourselves. Black lives can never matter.
And Aretha Franklin's family this morning called his eulogy or whatever as offensive and distasteful, and they'd like for him to apologize. But again, he wasn't done there. He touched on another issue.
No one can deny that black America, there is truly a need in our race. As I look back in retrospect, allow my mind to take a stroll back down memory's lane. There was a time when we as a race had a thriving economy. Yes, we were rewarded with integration. We got what we fought for. We got what we marched for. But with the birth of integration, there also came the loss of not only the black community's economy, but there also came the loss of the black man's soul. Where is your soul, black man?
Where is your soul? I mean, it was...
Can I get an amen? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. It's interesting. I mean, this comes the end of the week of the 55th anniversary of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. So appropriate to take stock. Is that the appropriate? I mean, certainly, I think it's appropriate to take stock. Is that the appropriate venue? I don't know. I mean, what's the left's admonition? Speak truth to power. A lot of power, cultural influence in that room, obviously this was a service that was being watched nationally and internationally.
Oh, yeah, around the world, actually.
So for the left that was applauding, or the bipartisan applause for Meghan McCain making her political points at her father's funeral, why so sensitive to Reverend Jasper Williams making his points at Aretha's funeral, where he was invited to speak?
And he described children being a home, that children who are in a home without a father, as quote-unquote abortion after birth. He used his time up there judiciously to promote, you know, to try and wake people up and say, hey, look at what's happening in the black community. Fathers, take responsibility for your children. Mothers can't do this all on their own.
I mean, the reality...
Might have been the wrong place to have this conversation, but in a way, it's kind of a gift.
I mean, is what he said wrong on the substance of it?
he brought up factually based, you know, top 70% of kid children, there is not a black man in the home raising their children.
Verlon on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Now, this is the reason why me and my brother made a pact that we don't want any preachers, pastors utilizing our funeral. Because no matter where you, no matter what funeral it is, I've been to 33 funerals last year alone. And every last pastor got some political point to make or some social justice point to make. This woman family said shit, they didn't want anything political said at the funeral. That's why they didn't let Farrakhan speak. You are there to honor this woman's family funeral and set her a sail to the abyss. Just let her go, let her rest in peace. But everybody wants to make a political statement, and that's not the place to make it. I'm sick of that. I went to 33 funerals. Trust me, every last one of those reverends made a political statement, and it's tiresome. It's tiresome.
Right. Were they similar to the message that Reverend Williams had?
No, clearly.
You say, listen. Now, there's no denying everything he said was right. I just don't think it was the right place and time to do it.
Okay.
These reverends, all of them want to be, they all want to be the man. They all want to take on the man, and they want everybody to follow them. They want everybody to follow them like Jesus. I'm sick of it.
Okay, all right. Thanks for the call, Verlon. I mean, I understand that. I understand the argument. I think it's a fair criticism to say honest message, proper message, wrong venue. But here's the thing. When does that message that Reverend Williams delivered, when and where does that get amplified? I mean, you've had Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams and Bob Woodson and so many others, including Jim Brown to get some amplification because he's Jim Brown. But still, where does that message get amplified? I mean, certainly it doesn't get amplified by the D.C. press corps when Walter Williams or Thomas Sowell or Bob Woodson or Jason Riley or John McWhorter say anything of the sort, Shelby Steele. So, you know, he had the trust of the family, as you mentioned, Amy. He presided over Aretha Franklin's father's funeral. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there was no stipulations because they probably didn't see it coming. And he decided in that moment, in that room with this stage, was an opportune moment to make a bigger, broader point. And where else?
He knew the world was watching.
Where else does that message get amplified? And when else is the question. So, and maybe the Reverend Jasper Williams I'm talking about thought that he's willing to take the criticism for the timing of this message to deliver the message in the hopes that people talk about the substance. Lewis in Dayton, Texas.
Good morning, Dan. Amy, how are you doing this morning?
Good.
I pretty much agree with everything you and the last caller said. You know, I think the timing of it was, you know, couldn't be any worse. But at the same time, you know, I do agree with everything he said, but I think he took the opportunity, as you said, with all the political figures there and being on the national stage, I think he took the time to get a point across that I think, to be honest, a lot of people needed to hear. I think a lot of leftists in the family that are, you know, believe in those values didn't appreciate it because it went against their political beliefs. And I do think the family took a little bit more offense because this was more to celebrate Aretha Franklin's, you know, life. But at the same time, you know, we've all seen the MTV Awards, Academy Awards, where everybody's bashing Trump. Those awards, those places aren't for that. Therefore, you know, the awards to give honor to the people, the actors, the musicians, or whatever venue it may be. And there's never a complaint, never really a complaint about, you know, the left never has a complaint about, you know, when they bash Trump or GOP, you know, people in that venue. So I see the problem here, and I do understand the timing is horrible, but, you know, maybe putting them on the spot is what upset them more than anything.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Lewis. I mean, I'm sympathetic to his willingness to take criticism in order to make the powerful uncomfortable in that room. Mike and Munster.
Hey, good morning. I completely agree with Verlon, and there's a time and a place for everything, and a funeral may not be the time and a place, but you keep wanting them to, the left, to give credence to some really great people like a Thomas Sowell, and that's never going to happen, and I don't know if you're trying to fool us or fool yourself. I agree with you all the time, but in this instance, you know the answer to that, and you act surprised.
No, how am I acting surprised? What I'm saying is that those great people don't get amplified by the D.C. press corps and never will. And so Jasper Williams, willing to endure the criticism because he was given that opportunity to make the powerful uncomfortable, to deliver a message that others have been delivering for decades to an international audience, maybe it's worth the criticism. I'm not fooling myself. I'm defending Jasper Williams. Thanks for the call, Mike.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, put some clothes on, Grande. Dan and Amy, and this controversy over sticking in Hollywood entertainment. First Man, this new Ryan Gosling movie about Neil Armstrong, biopic of Neil Armstrong. The controversy surrounds the planting of the flag on the moon. You know, Neil Armstrong's right. One small step, one giant step. The flag that's planted, not the American flag.
So there is a flag planted, but it's a different flag? I thought they just skipped that just altogether.
Yeah, well, that's the point. So they don't profile that moment, sort of a big one. I would say it sort of punctuated Neil Armstrong's career, one would argue.
Yeah, but the film is most about his relationship with his wife and his children and all the trials and tribulations and experiments he had to go through to get to land on the moon. I'm not offended by that. I mean, in the trailer, yeah. The flag shows up seven times.
So, but not in the movie.
Not in the final scene of the movie.
Yeah. And so would there be a biopic of Neil Armstrong's life if he hadn't planted the flag on the moon? The relationship and the trials and tribulations you talk about are all in pursuit of what? Culminate with what?
Someone described to me that they don't show the planting of the flag because they wanted to portray landing on the moon as being a human achievement.
Precisely.
And not specifically an American.
That's exactly what Gosling said. And it's exactly wrong. It's a human achievement? No, it's an American achievement. It was this country. It was our space program. It wasn't humanity's. Right. Botswana had nothing to do with it. Estonia, nothing to do with it.
What about the Swedes?
Swedes, nothing to do with it.
Come on.
America.
That's not what my grandpa told me.
America. And Ben Shapiro actually makes a good point in his piece about this. So America is nefarious and is to blame for all of humanity's ills. All of humanity's ills were blamed for. All of the isms and phobias, some of which are manufactured by the left, and the man's inhumanity to man the world over. It's all America's fault, per the rest of the world. And Hollywood. But this is a human achievement that transcends borders. No, it doesn't. No, it isn't. It's an American achievement. And this is another sort of we are the world sentimental barbarism, example of sentimental barbarism from Hollywood. And, you know, Gosling, this Canadian simp, you know, wrote leftist in Hollywood, doesn't know up from down. They've all read one book and probably combined to split it up, Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, and this is from those pages. It's a disgrace, plain and simple.
So you're not going to go see the movie?
No.
I'm going to go see Deadpool 2 again, though.
By the way, interestingly, just on this, Buzz Aldrin, critical of Gosling and this movie.
And you released a tweet of a picture of the American flag going up on the moon and put in a number of hashtags.
Recognizes that American achievement. That he was part of. By the way, Neil Armstrong's sons defend Gosling. It's fine. It's their right. I'm going with Buzz on this one.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Tickets for Freedom Summit Chicago are on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
Dan and Amy, by the way, just closing the loop on our discussion of First Man, that new Ryan Gosling biopic on Neil Armstrong. Can't wait for his next one, a biopic of Ira Hayes, and where humanity again raised that flag at Iwo Jima. Another achievement of humanity, not the five soldiers. Okay. What happened in church over the weekend?
And by the way, this is not limited to Catholics. When if this was a scandal going on in the Lutheran Church, we would be talking about it as well.
Yeah.
Because faith is so central, and these churches as civic institutions are so central, not just the Catholic Church, of course. So what happened? The homily from your priest over the weekend. We want to hear about it. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. And the reason I say that is because Cardinal Supich.
Has he had a come to Jesus moment?
Tell me about the rabbits, Blaze. He instructed Chicago area priests to deliver a statement at Mass this weekend, slamming NBC5, calling the interview he did with Marian Ahern misleading, saying it was edited to suggest that he and Pope Francis were downplaying the ongoing clergy sex abuse scandal. Supich issued the statement last week, saying the clip of his interview with NBC5 was edited in such a way that gave the false impression that Pope Francis and I consider the protection of children to be less important than other issues such as the environment or immigration. Nothing could be further from the truth, and he wanted the record set straight at churches throughout the Chicago Archdiocese over the weekend.
If he wanted the record set straight, then he would have said just that, but he didn't. We heard what he said. That wasn't crafty editing. That was the rhetoric that he used. He said that. He should be focusing more, he meaning the Pope, so Pope Francis should be choking more on, you know, environmental issues.
Not going down the rabbit holes.
That's sick.
So the other thing that's problematic about that is, Cardinal Supich, you're allowed to supplement the record. You're allowed to add more to the record than what was reported at NBC5.
Well, also there's Channel 7, too, Channel 2, and PBS, and, well, WTTW. He gave interviews to those reporters.
Yes,
too.
but it's the statement he made to Marian Ahern that has him in such hot water, has him the subject of so much criticism, all of it deserved. So I'm curious to hear what happened with homilies, because what happened in D.C. was none too pleasant for Cardinal Worrell, one of the cardinals mentioned in the Vigano letter. The 11 pages of detailed information that the Archbishop Vigano provided about the highest reaches of the Catholic Church, including Pope Francis, knowing about sex abuse and doing nothing. In fact, elevating and enlisting Cardinal McCarrick until a couple of months ago. Cardinal McCarrick, who apparently, according to Vigano, was instrumental in the appointment of Supich to be Archbishop of the Chicago Diocese. Interesting. Cardinal Worrell offered his statement over the weekend on Sunday service in D.C. And some of the parishioners not digging what he had to say. Here's what one man did when Worrell started talking about praying for Pope Francis amid the criticism he's receiving.
We need to hold close in our prayers and our loyalty our Holy Father Pope Francis. Increasingly, it's clear that he is the object of considerable animosity.
Shame on you.
Man stood up and said, shame on you, and then walked out. Another woman in attendance turned her back, and they got a photo of this, turned her back on Cardinal Worrell during his homily, stood up and turned her back, and she had this to say to CNN after the service.
I think he should resign. I think he should understand that just because you didn't mean to do something doesn't mean that there weren't terrible consequences for lots of people. And I feel he should resign as cardinal.
Yeah. By the way, with respect to Supich's statement that the idea that the environment or immigration is more important to us than the protection of children, nothing could be further from the truth. By the way, there's two things with that. One is Supich is trying to redefine the debate as what he meant to say, to try and extract himself from what he said, which is
the classic political move, number one. Number two, he's also trying to redefine the problem in the Catholic Church as just one of pederasty, and it's not. It's not just children that were exploited. It's also post-adolescent men mm-hmm. engaged in engaged in homosexual relationships with members of the clergy, like Cardinal McCarrick. The response from Pope Francis?
Oh, my. He's responded.
Well, he's responded.
Is his response about climate change, or is it about this?
I'm so glad you asked.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you ready? Kidding. Take this, Vigano. You ready? You think you got Francis cornered? Hardly. Here's his response. Saturday, he called on Christians and others to work to save the marvelous God-given gift of the great waters and all they contain. And to do so, we must fight the plastics litter that pollutes our waterways. Quote, as if everything depended on us, unquote.
And then he said we should ban straws.
So,
to save the turtles.
Plastics.
Wow.
By the way, that's
a deflector.
Pope Francis has his facts wrong on this, just as he does climate change. And the same thing with seepage. I pointed to the Bjorn Lomborg piece in the New York Post last week with this new study out about climate change solutions and how many tens of millions more you would drive into poverty with what the left proposes as solutions to climate change. In addition to that, we know that about 95% of all the plastic litter in our waterways comes from five rivers in the world. So the emergency of plastics littering seas and oceans. But just so you know, I'm not going to say a word about sex abuse, horrors that occurred in the church and were excused, if not outright covered up. I'm not going to say a word about 11 pages of detailed testimony from the nuncio of the Vatican, Archbishop Vigano. But I am going to talk about plastics. That's not tone deaf. Is that what you mean, Cardinal Supich, about how nothing could be further from the truth that you and Pope Francis are so focused on the issue at hand and they're not less important than the environment, plastics, immigration? Are they equally important? What's the hierarchy? Maybe Marian Ahern, since Supich wants to talk, or he wants to use others to flack for him, priests in the Chicago Archdiocese, maybe you should sit down for another interview to be asked questions. He's welcome on this show anytime. I got all kinds of questions. Dan on the Stevenson, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, Amy, great show. I watched the unedited interview, and he just reminded me of a scumbag politician in damage control mode.
Yeah.
And I think he's got to go. I'm at a parish on the near southwest side in the suburbs. Our pastor, thankfully, didn't mention a thing about it because I think we would have booed him. And I think he himself knew that it was that Blaze has got to go.
What parish? So,
I don't want to out him, though.
Yeah. All right.
I don't want him to get in trouble. I'll just say it's you know, in between Oak Lawn and Orland Park.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dan.
You're going to scour the area.
Pinpoint
now.
That. No, it's interesting. It's interesting he says, I don't want to out him because I don't want him to get in trouble. He's got a legitimate concern there. A priest named Juan Carlos Gavancho,
yeah.
Who's from Chicago, but he is a priest in Santa Barbara. He gave a homily about this, talking about the nature of the sex abuse scandal, the Vigano letter, but not flacking for Francis.
Right. Oh, gosh, what happened?
He told to clean out his office at the rectory.
Really?
Yeah. I'll post this homily on my Twitter at Dan Proft if you want to hear it. And the reaction was swift. So don't think there was not an orthodoxy in the church as it pertains to this. And don't think there still isn't.
Colleen in Plainfield. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, Dan and Amy. I am a faithful Catholic, 16 years of Catholic school. My husband and I are sacrificing our retirement to send our three daughters to Catholic schools to the tune of about $35,000 a year. And for some reason, this time, this is really, I've had it. And I went to church to clear my head and hear what is coming down from the top. And I was presented with a homily where the priest said, "It's like a Rorschach ink drawing." And he held it up. And it was the vaguest non-response. I mean, so we all see what we want to see? Is that the answer? I was out of my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's the spiritual leadership you expect, right? Whatever you see is the truth. Thanks for the call, Colleen. Michael Wolff might as well be the head of the Catholic Church. If it sounds true, it is. Kathy in Palatine.
Hi, I just have two things to say. One is, don't leave Jesus because of Judas. And the other is, pray, pray, pray. That's all we can do.
All right, thanks for the call, Kathy. By the way, to that topic about leaving the church and distinguishing the church from the faith, which is important to do. I know it's not easy, but it's important to do. There's another great commentary, homily, if you will, from a local guy who's now a bishop out in California, I believe, Robert Barron, who's one of the best Catholic communicators on the planet. If you haven't seen his Word on Fire series and you're interested in that sort of scholarship, he's just the best. He has an excellent 8-minute homily about staying with the church if you're Catholic and, fighting the civil war within the church that Matthew Schmitz from First Things wrote about in the New York Times last week. So I'll post both of those. If you're interested, you can check them out.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
We're talking about the Catholic Church, but of course, the problem of sexual predators isn't limited to the church.
Changing, though, because, all the background checks, most of them are complete, and 246 teachers, volunteers refused to take the background checks.
Well, that's so the CPS scandal that continues to go underreported and largely ignored. And remember the scale of this from an article 4 years ago based on the Department of Education study, the Shake Shaft Report. National Catholic Register pointed out that the federal report said 422,000 California public school students would be victims of some kind of sexual assault before graduation. The state's entire Catholic school enrollment, 143,000. This is 4 years ago. The first half of 2002 going back, near 2,000 stories about sexual abuse in Catholic institutions in California. Four stories about the federal government's discovery of the much larger and ongoing abuse scandal in public schools. Why don't we want to pay attention to sex abuse in public schools? I don't understand it.
I don't either.
I don't understand it. And obviously, as a CPS parent, you don't understand it either.
No, but they're trying to reassure us with all emails every day on the matter. We are ensuring your kids' safeties. Blah, blah, blah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.